This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, my name's Helen, and I stopped drinking alcohol almost exactly 7 years ago. When I stopped drinking, I really felt a lot of benefits. My health was better, my finances were better, my attention was better, and I really felt like I started to kind of grow up as a person. At times, it was still difficult. At times, even now, I feel like sometimes it's hard to explain to people why I don't drink. And sometimes still, I feel like I'm a bit alone on this journey. But a couple of years ago, I found Over the Influence, and that really changed things a lot for me. And I just felt like I wasn't alone in this journey anymore. It's just so nice to have this massive connection with all these like-minded people. Come along to Over the Influence and be part of an amazing community.
You've heard the podcast, now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk. Hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be in the world. Welcome to Over the Influence, the world's best and biggest and fastest growing, probably, alcohol free podcast. It is wonderful to have you listening. You are joining us in series 3, episode 11.
Episode 11. Episode, we haven't done an episode 11 before. We've only ever done episode 10s. And why are we doing episode 11, guys?
What can we say or not? Or are we trying to keep our three big gobs closed?
Look, okay, yeah. As the producer of this podcast, I'm going to make an executive decision to say you're never going to have a Monday now without Over the Influence.
Oh, Freddie, did you know this?
I thought I put a text in the WhatsApp group. I should probably check with the talent first. There's never going to be a Monday now without... we're going to record every single week for the rest of our alcohol-free lives.
So, hang on, Ben. Tell me, does this mean the world's fastest growing alcohol-free podcast is going weekly?
Weekly.
Did I read that right?
Yeah, weekly. Every Monday for the rest of time.
This combines three of my favourite things. This is chatting relentlessly about an alcohol-free life. Brilliant. I love talking, and I do, believe it or not, really enjoy catching up with you two Muppets every single week. It's one of my favourite things. Sorry about the word Muppets.
There's something else that I love doing as well, and sometimes I do it whilst I'm talking to you two, but you two can't see. And that's drinking a coffee. What do you think I was going to say, Shaz?
We should probably introduce who we are, shouldn't we?
Should we? Yes.
If you're listening for the first time.
Let me reintroduce ourselves. My name is Sharon Hartley. Most people call me Shazza. And the reason I'm speaking like this is because I got braces fitted yesterday. So if I sound a little bit weird, this is why. I'll try and work with it. I am 1,000 and odd days alcohol free. Used to be a daily drinker, ramped it up at weekends, started a little challenge, thought I'd try 90 days alcohol free. And here I am, more than 1,000 days later. It will never not surprise me. I'm not doing this on my own. I am with the wonderful Freddie. And actually, this is a bit weird, because even though he is still in the future, I've never seen Freddie smiling like this, because it's his Saturday night and it's our Saturday morning. I mean, look at the bloody grin on that.
Because we have an Australian guest today. For once, we're doing this in my evening. So I'm here with an alcohol-free beer, just chilling out, relaxing, reading my book, and just having a good time. Usually when we have these podcast episodes, it's 6 a.m. for me, and I'm literally there in my Jimmy Jams just trying to claw my eyes open. But hello everybody, I am back from the future. You can call me Freddie McFly, which is certainly better than being called Freddie Got Fingered, which is what I've been called many a time. But 2.5 years ago, I decided to maybe stop getting drunk every night, start running, won some ultra marathons, moved halfway around the world, and the best part is that I get to see my fabulous co-hosts every single week here on Over the Influence.
Oh, isn't he lovely? Isn't he lovely? Honestly, Freddie, if you don't mind me saying, normally you have got a face like a well-slapped arse on the podcast.
Lovely.
But today...
And now it's just like a partially slapped arse, as usual.
You are looking. You're glowing. You look so happy.
Ben, we talk about your teeth, Shaz, and mine are going a little bit in this light. And,
yeah, your teeth, they are shining blinding. Quite bright there. I mean, I didn't want to draw attention to it, but...
Are they new teeth, Freddie? Come on, be honest with us. Have you got new teeth?
They're a year old, obviously. If I move the light away, then you can still see.
Yeah, they're still
shining bright, yeah.
Oh, trying to keep Ben. In order is our producer, Background Ben. Although he started as Background Ben, and when we started doing this podcast, Ben was partial to a few beers, not a problem. But we sort of got in his ears, we got under his skin, and here he is now, alcohol-free and approaching a year, Ben.
Yes, I'm in my Jimmy Jams trying to claw my eyes open because I was up late last night with the football. England plays Scotland in the Euros. But I didn't drink because, 2 weeks
Fantastic.
Away from the year, which I'm delighted about. I can't quite believe it. But and I'm going to carry on. I've decided that now. I'm not just going to get to the year and... go back to drinking. I'm definitely going to carry on. I really like alcohol-free life. It's a good version
of me.
Wouldn't
be a good advert for the podcast, would it? If you got to the year and then just got absolutely smashed. might make series four a bit tricky.
We're super proud of you. Enough about Thank us you. Banging on. This podcast is all about you. It is all about our amazing guests who share those stories with you. I am going to stop talking now because my teeth hurt. So, Freddie, if you could jump in.
Absolutely. So, to let everyone behind the curtain of Over the Influence, usually a lot of the guest work is done by Shazza in terms of sorting guests, organising guests and everything else. But this week's guest is a guest that I reached out to. I did a very male thing where for the last 2 weeks I've been going, check me out, everybody, I've booked a guest. And Shazza's like, I do that every single day. What are you talking about?
Well done,
but
Freddie.
I am very proud of our guest that we have today. So I first became aware of her a few years ago. When I read the articles that she wrote in the UK's biggest newspapers, she had my interest. But when I read the articles about her life in those same publications, she had my attention. She's been heavily involved in the music industry. She's dabbled in the pornography industry as a writer, I hasten to add. She's written for NME, Rolling Stone, Time Out, and the biggest newspapers in the world. She published a novel, Cherry Bomb, followed by a jaw-dropping memoir, Woman of Substances. And I am loving her latest book, Everything Harder Than Everyone Else. She's a director of Smart Recovery Australia. She's an amazing writer. She's a kick-ass fighter. And she's a hell of an inspiration. I am delighted to welcome Jenny Valentish.
Oh, this is great. It's like being on This Is Your Life, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Oh, I'll tell you what, I've been nervous about that. I've been practicing that all afternoon.
Well done, Freddie.
I'm just going to kick back now. You know, my work here is done. You guys have a nice chat. No, Jenny, it's awesome to have you on. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. Love the show.
I guess to start us off then, if anyone hasn't heard of you, and I know it's probably a tricky question to start with in terms of how do you summarize your journey so far, but is it possible just to give a bit of background about you and your story?
Yeah, well, I'll give you the booze-sodden story. That would make most sense. Yeah, I grew up in Slough, a bit of a disappointing place, but we can't blame that really. And then I discovered my dad's booze cabinet when I was 13 and just threw myself into it like a lemming off a cliff. I loved it. I mean, I loved the fact that, there's this very shocking, confronting taste, you know, so I would drink his spirits neat and just get stuck into it after school. And so didn't really have that introduction a lot of people have where it's kind of drinking creme de menthe with your peers or something, you know, horrible like that, or Malibu. Just got stuck straight into whiskey and vodka and gin, neat and that kind of thing. And it kind of tied in with my love of things like heavy metal. I was starting to go to gigs at that point and seeing bands like Motley Crue. Within a few years, reading authors like Hunter S. Thompson and Bukowski and that whole genre of usually male writers, actually, who whose identity was very tied in with drug use. And I was very interested in counterculture. When I went to university, I did American studies, and I did my dissertation on the American Underground Press. So again, it was all these kind of alternative voices speaking from the fringes. I very much was drawn to these kind of worlds where you're on the outskirts, because I felt a bit like that. But alcohol was with me every step of the way. And also I wanted to be the first to do everything, which is kind of where the title of my new book, Everything Harder Than Everyone Else, comes from in a way, because it's that mentality of always the person who wants to be doing, trying each drug before their peers, being the last to leave, being the person to take the most. For some reason, I've always had this real try-hard element to my personality. I don't think it's gone really yet. So that was kind of propelling me forth as well, this ambition to be more wasted than anybody else in more spectacular fashion. And then I became a music journalist. So of course, you know, that kind of behaviour is encouraged or at least not criticised. So, you know, if I went on extremely long lunches or I went to interview bands and I got drunk with the bands at the same time, it was never commented on. I used to be in music PR as well, and I would literally turn up in the morning, put my can of Strongbow outside their front door so I could return to it at lunchtime. I mean, that was when I was an intern for them, but then surprisingly they gave me a job. So I just thought, well, they knew what I was like, so I'll just carry on doing that. But I was also very socially awkward and shy. So I discovered speed, and it had the effect of, well, A, keeping me out of danger, I felt, because it keeps you soberish, but also it made me much more outgoing and willing to sort of be on the phone as a PR talking to journalists all day. So, you know, I think as most people find in the early days, everything was a useful tool and it did play a part in a semi-successful lifestyle. But of course, you're being an alchemist all the time and you're trying to balance these substances in your body and the levels. And I mean, alcohol became such a crutch that I really wasn't doing anything sober at all ever. So, you know, while I was using it for Dutch courage, it actually made me more fearful of ever doing anything without it. And it started to come to a bit of a crux when I was in my 30s and I'd moved to Australia and I was getting really good jobs. Like I was, you know, I edited a few magazines, and it was while I was editing one of them, I went to some kind of, I can't even remember what it was, but it was a meeting where people from the music industry were all in this room, and we'd been asked to introduce ourselves, just go around the room and say who we were and a bit about ourselves. And I started to panic because I hadn't had time to drink. So I'd come straight from work, and normally I would have got a traveller for the tram. But I hadn't had time to pick anything up, so I was running late. And I was like, oh, God, I've got to speak out loud, and I haven't had anything to drink. And I was prepping myself, really. You know, I could see it coming closer to me, and all I had to do was say my name. And that was an editor and, you know, maybe a little bit about the magazine. And I was panicking. And I thought, God, that's really serious. If you can't even bear to do that without being fortified, that's a bit of a problem, you know, on top of all the problems of, you know, alcohol and drugs affecting your mental health generally and things like getting myself into really dangerous situations. I was thinking, I feel really pathetic now on top of that. So I started trying to address the drinking by doing things like going to my GP. And my GP did that thing they always do where they just put you on antidepressants, even though she said, you're not actually depressed. So I tried that. I tried hypnosis, tried counselling, and it just became increasingly obvious that the only thing really you need to do is stop. But I just thought, well, how can you live like that, though? I mean, my biggest fear was, who will I be if I take away alcohol? You know, that
terrifying thought, isn't it? It's a terrifying thought when it's defined so much of who you are and what you've done over the years. Like you said, Jenny, you started when you were 13, and the thought of living a life with no alcohol. People, I mean, we've said, we all shit ourselves and went, how do you do this?
Yeah, I thought I literally would be like an amoeba without any kind of features, just floating around. Like, I won't have anything. I won't have any personality. It's a really weird way of thinking, but this is what I thought. So I was thinking, technically, I can't stop because I won't be anyone. But eventually, I just had one really, really awful night. And it'd been this kind of crescendo, really, of going out every single night. I was married at the time, going out without him, and just being really indiscreet and talking to people, just running my mouth off, and felt like I was really, some part of me was really trying to force my hand to stop by just embarrassing me so much. And I had one really bad last night, which I didn't even put the details of in the book, glossed over.
That bad?
Yeah. I mean, I've heard worse, but I just didn't really. You don't have to give everything, do you?
No, you don't, Jenny.
And then I woke up, and I must admit, the first thing I did was I summoned a friend to the local pub, and I was talking to her about what had happened. And then it just dawned on me that I'm going to stop, and that I've run out of options, literally. And the sense of relief was massive because I felt absolutely 100% sure that this was it. And it was. I didn't drink again for 8 years. And I was very lucky. I never had that whole white knuckling, you know, was it one day at a time thing. I had just stopped. At first, my fear of losing my identity did come true a little bit. I don't know about you guys, but I kind of lost my sense of humor at first. And I did the classic thing of retreating as well. I'd split up with my husband, so I moved to the country on my own. So I was kind of like Miss Havisham, you know, just but smoking a lot and not being very social. But eventually, after about a year and a half of thinking, oh, I might be on the abyss of depression here, I decided to do this blog where I had to do something new every day for a year. And I did, and it meant I was out of my comfort zone. I was meeting new people. It was things like I might help someone working on the railroads, like putting down sleepers, or, you know, I might join someone in whatever it is they do for a living for a day. Some days it would be a bit boring because, you know, I couldn't have a job as well. But there were some really interesting things like riding a camel, you know, riding in a glider, blew up a wheelie bin with butane gas. Like, it was like,
as you do.
Yeah. I had to get someone to show me how to do that. So it was really good. It worked the moment I started it. It gave me purpose and meaning, and it worked immediately. So yes, that's my winding road to quitting alcohol, which I did for 8 years. And then I published a book about women and addiction. And it was literally when I handed that book in, which was around the 8 year mark, that I started drinking again, but in a non-dramatic fashion. Whenever I say that sentence, I started drinking again, I picture people, you know, picturing some extreme dramatic incident, but actually it was a decision. It felt like the end of an era, and I felt like I'd done a lot of work and a lot of therapy and a lot of meetings, and I felt okay about it. And that was about 4 years ago, and it's been going good. I don't recommend it as a path to people because I just don't recommend anything to people, but it's worked for me.
That's awesome. And thank you so much for sharing that, Jenny. And there's so many questions that I've got and so many places to go, but I guess the first one, we talked about almost, yeah, forcing your own hand, and that's certainly something that I know I can certainly relate to. And did you ever properly try and quit before then, apart from like the usual Sunday morning, oh, I'm never drinking again, oh, it's lunchtime, maybe I'll just have one kind of thing? Or was that the first time when you were like, enough's enough? Or were there, you know, other failed attempts beforehand?
No, I had tried before. I first stopped when I was 18 because something really traumatic happened when I was in a blackout. But it was just so young, you know. So I stopped for a month. But it was hard to figure, it was hard to imagine a life of sobriety at that age. And I know people do, and they do it very well. But at the time, I just couldn't fathom it. And so later, you know, throughout my 20s, I'd stop here and there. But usually it was to let something I'd done blow over. I'd want people to think, oh, she's not drinking, good. But I hadn't really intended for it to be permanent until I reached 34.
Jenny, you talked. Oh, sorry, Freddie, go on, carry on.
No, no, sure, I was being really unprofessional, just thinking out loud and thinking, I think I was 34 as well.
That's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I was 34, but it was very, very similar. But I literally woke up one morning and just thought, well done, Freddie, you've tried really hard for the last few months to excuse my language, really fuck yourself up, but you've finally done it. So congratulations, now it's time to stop. And it's that sort of thing where, you know, the nights get a bit later, or the finishes the next day get a bit later, and you push it and you push it and you think, oh, that was a close call, and then you finally just one night you go and tear the arse out of it. And I don't know, I wonder if there's some kind of self-destructive thing there in all of us or a lot of people that just, and I want to come on to this later as well in terms of that love of pushing limits, but I think maybe sometimes we have to just see how far we can push it until we break it, and then we're like, oh, okay, now I found out, now I can stop for a bit or for forever because I've finally found those limits.
I was getting really, though, quite scared for the first time and confused. I'd find that, I mean, I always used to black out right from the beginning, but that was happening on way less alcohol. I know people talk about tolerance and, you know, building up tolerance. For me, tolerance has gone the other way towards the end. So it only takes a few drinks for me to be really confused, really wasted. And I had this feeling of doom, like I was going to walk out in front of a tram or fall and hit my head and die or something. There was this real strong feeling of you're going to die. So things had changed very quickly in a very dark way.
I just wanted to come back to what you said, Jenny, when you'd made the decision to stop drinking alcohol, and you were terrified as to who you might be, who the hell am I going to be, how will I exist? You know, if we fast forward to present day and all the work you do that Freddie talked about in the introduction, the books you've written and the jobs you've had and everything, obviously, you know, you're an incredible person, so talented. But at what point, if we rewind a bit, did it become apparent, you know what, I can actually do this, and I'm not going to be an amoeba existing in a life with no alcohol. There's all these layers to me. When did that become apparent that actually you could do this?
I think it was around the 18-month mark when I did that blog. And the reason I did the blog was because I went to a friend's father's funeral, and I'd never met him, actually. I was just going to support my friend, and I was really adrift, but his eulogies were amazing. He'd had cancer, and he used to be a keen yachtsman, and he had to give that up, but he took up something like some instrument like violin, couldn't do that anymore, was a really keen chess player, so he did that instead, couldn't do that anymore. He was reading quantum physics on his deathbed, and there's this moment of, bloody hell, if he can do it in the face of existential and actual physical pain, I think you can as well. So it was more of a buck your ideas up moment. But humour is a really important one for me. Like, I've always had a black sense of humour. I like other people's black sense of humour. And when I lost mine in the initial early period of sobriety, that was a huge loss. But that started to gradually come back, and I really worked with that and nurtured it. So I think that was key.
That's really interesting, because when I... I'm 47 now, started doing this when I was 44. And those first 6-7 weeks, miserable as sin, I thought, well, this is a load of shit. And I'd be sat there on a Saturday night, you know, nursing a cup of decaf, thinking, missing out on everything, this is awful. None of it was funny. Fast forward, the further you get into it, you know, triple figures, and then a few months, and then you're thinking, actually, this is all right. And like you, Jenny, you start to discover who you are. And one thing on this pod that we are so proud about is our sense of humour, is the fact that we think it's, yes, some days are massively shit, but all of us have just laughed our way through a lot of this sobriety nonsense, and it is brilliant. And to experience humour and laughter sober, there's nothing quite like it, is there?
Yeah, and what a sense of purpose creating a podcast like this. I mean, it's got everything that psychologists who work in addiction would tell you you need. It provides meaning, connection, purpose, you know, it's outreach work as well, really. It's helping other people. So it's giving you everything that you are supposed to look for in recovery. And I was thinking before I started doing this blog, what's the point? You know, what am I doing? What is the point in life? And so it was that moment of finding meaning for me that turned everything around. And like I say, it started turning things around the day I began writing it. So it's really important to find those things that give us meaning.
When I was still drinking, I was training for the London Marathon. That was back in 2012 or something. But I was doing such a terrible job. Like I'd go for a run. I think once I took a beer with me on a training run. And you know, if I came back, my thought at that final hill would be like, I've earned my 10 beers and my extra large pizza and then your packet of cigarettes afterwards. So I was doing it, but I wasn't doing it properly. And then needless to say, that first marathon was, you know, top five worst days of my life, definitely. But when I stopped, that was when the extreme stuff started coming out. When I started to think, this is what I need to look for. And this is a whole new ball game I want to discuss with you as well, Jenny, because I know you talk about it a lot in your new book, you know, Everything Harder Than Everyone Else. And I think this topic is fascinating because I certainly, it certainly relates to me. A lot of what's in the book, it felt like you were literally writing it to me. But my hypothesis is that some of us, you know, as you say, we're all or nothing, go hard or go home. And if we're like that with drinking and partying and drugs, then we need to be like it with other things as well. But I'm sure you could explain your latest book much better than I can. So what's the whole gist of it?
Just on that quickly first, I think there's a stereotype of people who drink and take drugs as being quite lazy and not achieving anything. And yeah, I just don't find that to be true. And I used to, for instance, I used to go to AA meetings and everyone there would talk about being a workaholic. But yes, so the book is about people who push their bodies to extremes, which also requires them to push their minds to extremes. And so I interview people like ultra runners, bare knuckle boxers, performance artists, because they do all sorts of crazy things with their bodies, deathmatch wrestlers, fighters, bodybuilders. And I don't really, I do a sport, I do Muay Thai, but generally I don't have a massive interest in sports. So it's not a book about sport. It's about that mindset, that all or nothing mindset, as you say. And I wanted to talk to these people, find people who've got quite an insight into why they do what they do and find out why they push their sense of endurance and how they can push through pain where most of us wouldn't. And if that, what the commonalities are between these people who do these different pursuits and what the differences are. They're all what I would call natural born leg jigglers. You know, they're very restless people. Are you doing it right now, Freddie? You're moving a bit.
He never stops, Jenny.
I do.
He never
stops. Like to kind of like swap my legs around and everything. So yeah, that is me.
When I saw the title of the book and I had a look at the synopsis about what it was about, Jenny, I thought, well, there's Freddie in a nutshell. Not even joking.
And so it's people who have found something that brings them a sense of catharsis. Some of them are just people who really want to get out of their comfort zone, quite alpha types. But others are often using some kind of childhood sense of pain, if you like. Like bodybuilders are a great example because they often attract people who had very chaotic childhoods where they had inconsistent parenting. Maybe, you know, there was drug use within the home or something like that. And so they are now really attracted as adults to this very rigid lifestyle. They probably went through a very chaotic period in their teens and 20s, but then eventually they found relief in this lifestyle of calculating macros and micros and writing everything down and workouts and reps and sets. But a lot of people in the book had a very weird relationship with their body. They wanted to control it, which, you know, you could argue that you're doing drugs and alcohol as well. You're punishing yourself. I certainly was. It was kind of this curiosity of how hard can I self-flagellate myself with these packet of cigarettes and drugs and alcohol. So in a way, these people have found a different way of doing that. And, you know, they might have made their bodies into these almost superhuman machines, but they also have quite a dispassionate view of them as well. Like the body is a mule to be driven. So, but I'm not pathologizing people in this book. I'm celebrating them because I think they're the kinds of people who you would have had songs written about in centuries past, you know? And so I wanted to have that spirit to it.
I think it is amazing, you know, some of the stories in there. And I think, as you say, it is a very positive view on people that take these approaches. And I know, I mean, some of the things that I've done, it's difficult to explain to people, but I'm not particularly into running. Like I do it to halfway just mess myself up, if I'm totally honest, or for the adventure,
tear yourself
out, the adrenaline rush. Yeah. And I was nodding along there, or to write down, like through the Sahara Desert, when I have to write down every single little calorie that everything has and where it's going to come from. And then I'm like, oh God, that is me. But it's also, it almost makes you a bit calmer when you start to read these stories. You think, oh, it's not just me, you know, whether it's, and not everyone's going to be a bodybuilder, not everyone's going to be an ultra runner. But I do believe for everyone out there, their version of an ultra marathon might be an art class or writing a book or stepping out of their comfort zone in a different way. Maybe it's going to the gym for the first time or Muay Thai, as you say. And everyone has these challenges to take them out of their comfort zone. It's just whatever is relevant to them.
Yeah, that's right. So for me, I found I was best suited to fighting. I don't know. I guess I've got a lot of pent-up aggression and it's a great sport for that. But it also teaches you to be very respectful and you're trying to try and get your ego into check. I've got that classic thing of, you know, having the massive ego and low self-esteem, which I'm at least aware of now. But with fighting, you know, you're feeling really proud of yourself as you learn more and more and get better and better, but then your coach will, you know, you feel like they betrayed you in a sparring session or someone's knocked you down and it's embarrassing. And so it's this constant roller coaster of emotions, which maybe is what I'm seeking out, because I don't get that from benders anymore, but I get it from a sport. Mm. Like a lot of people in the book seem to be pressure testing themselves. How much can I withstand? Can I withstand this? If I can withstand this, then I can withstand anything and I'll feel like I can handle the rest of life better. So that's got a lot to do with it. Also, once you're in the ring, your adrenaline's running so high that it's really the weight that is the concerning time, and the time where you feel shy and like you could mess this up. Once you're in the ring, you've got literally someone's aiming at your head, so you can't worry about that kind of thing. Just very liberating.
We're Sound Rebel, and we just wanted to let you know a bit more about us.
Sound Rebel produced this podcast, and we work with all sorts of personalities to help them engage with their current audiences.
We work with actors, football commentators, comedians, personal trainers, radio presenters, hello, influencers, and even world record holders.
So, if you've got an audience but don't have a podcast, get in touch with us.
Oh, and tell us you heard this ad and we'll produce your first episode for free.
Email hello@soundrebel.co.uk now and take your place in the fastest growing broadcast medium in the world.
Right, back to the episode.
We are just going to take a quick break from this brilliant episode with Jenny. I think this break is going to be a little bit longer than it would normally be because so many of you have been dipping into the coffee pot to buy us a brew, an alcohol-free beer, basically supporting the podcast. Before we do this, I've got gobache, okay? I've got mouthache, and if we could just change the name of change the name of this section, Shazza's shout-outs, because my brace is hurting my teeth.
Oh, is that why your mouth's hurting?
Ben just shakes his head. He just shakes his head a lot, doesn't he? So this is, if it sounds a bit weird, it's because I had a brace fitted yesterday. 21 weeks of this pain, but I will be smiling like Shergar / Freddy in no time at all.
I knew that was coming.
Touché, touché. Should I start? Because we will literally be here all day. Yeah. There are so many shout-outs to do. I can only apologise. Let me just check that I've got everybody here. So, the first one here. Hugh has bought us a coffee, 413 days alcohol-free and absolutely loving it. I always do like this when somebody donates and it just says, somebody bought a coffee. No idea who that person is. It's just quite mysterious. Hello to Hillary. Found your podcast by chance and I'm hooked. I'm catching up and each episode offers inspiration, laughter and tears. Love it. Day 298. And no intention of going back. Did you get a load of that, Freddie and Ben? Inspiration, laughter, and tears.
Amazing. Which one's which?
Not sure. Let's try and work that out.
Inspiration, yeah. Ben's laughter, and I'm tears.
Yeah, we'll go with that. We'll go with that. Thank you, Hillary. You're an absolute
superstar. That's amazing. Thank you.
Thank you to Callum. Much appreciated, Callum. Lou says, absolutely love listening to you guys. Thank you for all you do. Truly inspiring and fabulously funny. I think it's mostly accidental, Lou, but thank you for that.
Thank you.
Amber has bought us a coffee. She says, I love the podcast so much. I look forward to Mondays now that I listen to you. You've helped me out of some dark moments. And this is really poignant, really personal. Amber says, I lost my dad in 2019 on Boxing Day due to his alcohol addiction. Amber has now been sober for 5 months and she says we've helped a lot. She says, thank you. Thank you to you, Amber. We know it's been a very, very painful time and you're doing amazing. Don't underestimate the power of what you are doing. You are changing your life. So thank you so much. Hello to Emma. I started listening because she was following Claire Pooley and was interested to hear her being interviewed.
Our mate, Claire Pooley.
Our mate.
Our mate, Claire.
You know, international best-selling author, our mate, Claire.
Claire Pooley said this is one of her favourite podcasts she's ever been on.
Not one of. She said it was the.
I know. I was trying to be modest.
Don't do that. We don't need modesty.
I mean, she did say that privately to her. She hasn't said that publicly. So did she even say it? We promise she said it. We promise. It's one of our favourite ever moments. Yeah.
She defo said it. Emma says she's hooked on the podcast and he's working her way back on all the episodes. So that is brilliant. This is Dice. Karen, how are you diddling? She says, I've been toying with giving up alcohol for a while. I drink on Saturdays, but it always ends up a bottle. And then Sundays are wasted. So she's binging the pod. Started on the 14th of June. She's going for the 100 days, Freddie.
Amazing.
Keep at it.
The Queen of Sobriety telegram is going out, is it?
I'll talk to you about that bloody telegram in just a moment, Freddie, if you don't mind. Hold that thought. It's actually brilliant. It's actually brilliant. But I blame you for everything. Cindy, alcohol-free for 7 months. She, another one that really enjoys Claire Pooley. I read The Sober Mummy's Diary as my first foray into Quitlip. It was perfect and I could relate to it so much. Loved her on the podcast and she's bought us an AF drink. So, Cindy, thank you. Two people here, both called Nikki. This Nikki says, thanks for giving me the confidence to start my AF journey. Been thinking about it for years. Always found a reason not to. She is on day 3, just starting out. You keep cracking on. You'll be in double figures before you know it. And then another Nikki here. This time last week, celebrating her 365. Totally love the pod. And she says, you guys have such an amazing rapport. If only you could hear us off pod when we were chatting amongst ourselves.
So, yeah, we really dislike each other. We've seen an opportunity to spread a message about alcohol-free life and realise that you will buy into our characters. But it really is all for show. Honestly, Sharon does my head in. Freddie is just like, he's just needy and texts all the time. Just drives me crazy.
Freddie who?
Can't stand it. Shit, we're recording. Sorry. Guys, isn't alcohol-free life great and fantastic?
Isn't it brilliant?
Yeah.
Isn't it brilliant?
Yay. Oh, I love you guys.
Loved you guys.
Nikki, she says, when I'm walking down the street, I look like a bit of a weirdo, she says, laughing to myself. But she's actually laughing along with us guys. Lol, she says. Thank you for that. And finally here, Lorraine in Sydney, virtual neighbour, Freddie, nearly near you-ish. She says, these coffees can either be one each or all three in one cup for me, for Shaz, to give her a caffeine hit for the London Marathon. Go, Shazza. Moving swiftly on, don't want to talk about it. It's the worst thing I've ever done.
Can I just say on that one, Shazza, we do need to talk about your marathon training a lot. But yeah, I know Lorraine in Sydney. She's an absolute superstar. I know how hard she's working at the moment, how much studying she's doing and everything else. So thank you so much, Lorraine. It's always nice to meet someone on this side of the world, and you are an AF legend.
Fabulous. Thank you, Lorraine. We'll talk about the absolutely shite marathon training another time, because for now it's my teeth that are hurting and not my legs. Jenny, it's been fascinating listening to your journey. And I feel like, well, one, sorry for using the word bloody journey. Again, we sort of laugh at that on the podcast. And I feel like we've only scratched the surface. You know, as you said, you first picked up a drink at 13. And are you now 43?
No, I'm 46, but thank you.
46? I apologise. It must have been an old article I was reading.
I apologise.
So just bring us up to sort of present day and the work you do with Smart Recovery based in Australia.
I'm a board director of Smart Recovery in Australia, and Smart Recovery started in the United States, and I'm also a chair of our branding and marketing committee internationally. But so when they approached me, Women of Substances had come out, and they approached me to see if I'd be interested in being on the board, you know, partly as a journalist, partly as the old lived experience. And I said, well, look, I have to tell you, though, like, I do drink now. And they said, no, it's not a problem at all, because Smart Recovery is about self-management. So it's up to you what that means. It's not just alcohol either. It's any kind of addictive behaviour. But, you know, you might go with the intention of, all right, well, I'm drinking a bottle of wine every day after work, and I'd really like to get that down to one glass or just, you know, a couple of times a week. So they were actually quite happy to have someone on who now just, you know, drinks moderately to get across the message that there are all different kinds of options, and it's all about the power of choice and having support. So that tied in really nicely with my sort of harm minimization slant, which I, you know, I wrote a lot about harm minimization in Women of Substances. I really believe that everyone needs to know that there are options. That's all I would say. Just understand that there are all different kinds of disciplines when it comes to recovery and different options. And it's important to sort of understand what fits in well with you and do lots of reading and that kind of thing.
Is it just in Australia? It's not in New Zealand. Is that the case?
It is nascently in New Zealand. I think there it's mainly attached to existing drug and alcohol services, and certainly in the UK. The different countries is quite interesting. You know, different countries have different drug policies. So, for instance, the United States is extremely abstinence-based. So Smart Recovery is also quite abstinence-based. Whereas in Australia, our national drug strategy is of harm minimization. So it's really kind of flexible organisation depending on the country.
Would you mind explaining that term? Because obviously abstinence, pretty clear. What is it? Minimisation?
Yes, yeah, so it's either called harm minimisation or harm reduction. Means the same thing, really. And it's the idea that, like, drug use is a spectrum and recovery is a spectrum. So at one end of that, you would have abstinence. But on the other end, you might have moderate use. And then, you know, Or you might, another form of harm minimization might be, right, well, you were using crack or methamphetamine, so you're going to remove that because that's not working well for you. However, maybe it's okay to keep the cannabis smoking, at least for the time being, because that's going to help you operate from day to day, and it's a bit dramatic to just quit everything. So harm minimization, harm reduction is working with you know, a professional to come up with a livable, realistic plan for you.
And is that kind of government supported in terms of as an overall policy for the general approach throughout healthcare in the country?
It is. I mean, in theory, it is. But at the same time, there's always a huge battle when we've got two safe injecting centres in Australia, one in Sydney and one in Melbourne. But there's always a huge battle to get them opened because while in theory, you know, having a centre where you can inject safely is harm minimisation, there's still a few politicians who want to sort of get behind that and put their neck on the line because that might put off their voters. But I mean, the alternative is doing it in the street or being like the fifth person on a needle. Whereas if you're in this centre where they've got medical staff there, then you're getting clean fits. And, you know, if you did overdose, there are people there to save you. So that's where the harm minimisation aspect comes into it.
I don't know what to say after all that. Jenny, it's been fascinating. Thank you so much. As I touched on earlier, I don't think we've hardly scratched the surface with your story. Like you said, you picked up a drink when you were 13. You're now 46. I get it right this time. You're looking well on it, by the way. You look a damn sight better than I do, and I'm a year older. So thank you so much for sharing your story. It will no doubt inspire so many people listening. And I'm just chuffed to bits to get another feisty woman on the pod. We've had a lot of fellas, Jenny. So thank you for balancing things up. Thank you for being fabulous. And thank you for sharing your story with us.
Oh, I'll do my best. Thanks for having me, Shaz. I really appreciate it.
And before you go, Jenny, just tell us where people can find out more about what you do, your work with Smart Recovery in Australia, and also the books that you've written, which one day may well be featuring our Freddie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the books are available from the usual kind of outlets like Amazon and, you know, at your local bookshops. The UK version of Everything Harder Than Everyone Else is coming out on July 1st. And the best place to see me yabbering on is actually Instagram. So that is JennyValentish_public.
Fabulous. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Discover more shows on the Sound Rebel Network.
Like Dilemmas with Jess Ellis.
Hi, my name's Jess, and you may remember me from playing Tegan Lomax in Hollyoaks for 5 years. Until I got unfortunately squashed to death by a tree and was left with a dilemma about what I should do with my life next. Well, this is it, my podcast, Dilemmas with Jess Ellis. Basically, in an Instagram world where everyone looks like they've got their shit together, we prove that they haven't by talking through your real-life problems with celebrity guests every week. We've had Duncan from Blue come on the podcast, Mandip Gill from Doctor Who, Gabby Allen from Love Island, Jake Quickenden, Kieran Richardson, and loads more. And we've got loads more celebs lined up ready to jump in and solve your headaches, no matter how big or small they are. We'd love you to send us your dilemmas. And of course, if you ask us to, we'll keep them completely anonymous. Just slide in our DMs on Instagram or Twitter @DilemmasJess. And that's it. If you're as nosy as I am, give Dilemmas with Jess Ellis a listen. And don't forget, nobody's got the shit together. And you are doing just fine.
Dilemmas with Jess Ellis from Sound Rebel.
Discover more of our shows at soundrebel.co.uk.